I'm Annie.
And I'm Parker.
And you're listening to
WGXC Acra
Hudson
Catskill 90.7 FM.
Amazing. Do you enjoy the arts? Have an interest in art classes and meeting your local creative community? Then join us at the Athens Cultural Center on the first Friday of each month from 5 to 7 p.m. View our latest exhibition over free nibbles and drinks hosted by our ACC board members. And get to know us. We are at 24 2nd Street in Athens and online at athensculturalcenter.org. We look forward to meeting you.
Waif Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Waif Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
Waif Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Daniela Dooling in Tivoli, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, April the 4th, 2024. I'm Mike Clifford. A more diversified economy, including solar energy, is stopping the brain drain and putting people in West Virginia to work through paid-on-the-job training. We get the details in this Working Nation, West Virginia News Service collaboration.
Coalfield Development CEO Jacob Hanna says his organization offers paid-on-the-job training in fields like renewable energy, construction, manufacturing, reuse and recycling, and agriculture. Coalfield Development has supported or started 72 new businesses and created 800 new jobs, according to Hanna.
Solar Hauler is our largest social enterprise that we've incubated. They're unionized to the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. They got over 100 employees, and they've done 1,000 installations. They're the largest solar installer in the region.
The most comprehensive program requires a three-year commitment. Nadia Romlagan reporting.
Coalfield Development has hired more than 1,700 people for local jobs through its training programs since it was founded in 2010. Meantime, lawmakers in Nebraska are confronting a late push to change the unusual way the state awards electoral votes after former President Donald Trump and his allies came out in support of a languishing proposal that could boost his chances of prevailing nationally in the Electoral College in a very close race. That from the Washington Post. They report Nebraska is one of only two states that divides its electoral votes among statewide and congressional district winners that allowed Biden to pick off an electoral vote in 2020. But the Post notes Governor Jim Pillen and Trump on Tuesday endorsed a proposal to return the state to a winner-take-all system, possibly upending the final days of the state legislative session, which ends April the 18th. Next to Colorado, where advocates are urging lawmakers to make key improvements to a state program seen as critical to helping people fleeing domestic violence or experiencing homelessness, helping them to get back on their feet.
Aubrey Wild with the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless says people living on the streets frequently have their belongings stolen, confiscated, or destroyed, and without a valid ID card, it can be impossible to access housing services, get a job, or even fill a prescription.
So we want to make sure that people aren't stuck in the experience of homelessness. Getting an ID document can be something that helps propel someone out of homelessness and gets them on that path to greater stability.
Under the current Colorado Necessary Document program, people who need help securing documents must first get a paper voucher from a participating nonprofit organization. Vouchers are only accepted at state-operated DMV sites and two vital statistics offices in the Denver metro area. Advocates want lawmakers to eliminate paper vouchers and allow people impacted by natural disasters and other qualifying Coloradans to get a new ID at more locations. I'm Eric Galatis.
This is Public News Service. Hoosiers running for public office often criticize the government despite wanting to be part of it. Arjo Aluri explains.
Research published in The Conversation, one of the world's leading publishers of research-based news, finds many people misunderstand civil jobs, and federal employees are dedicated to serving the public and upholding government integrity. Retired Indiana University professor James Perry, who contributed to the research article, says the federal government has grown to include about 3 million career civil servants, models for democratic governments worldwide.
We didn't have NASA, we didn't have the Social Security, Medicare came in the mid-1960s. We just have all these enterprises that are now part of the federal domain that didn't exist a few decades ago, much less 150 years ago.
Despite political differences, Perry says civil servants prioritize executing lawful orders and providing vital expertise. Appreciating their merit-based service is crucial for maintaining effective governance.
Meantime, local election leaders in North Dakota don't feel like political violence is something they'll encounter. But a new poll adds to the list of concerning sentiments among voters, keeping these offices on their toes.
In a new PBS Marist poll, one in five U.S. adults believes Americans may have to resort to violence to resolve political divisions. The level of acceptance was higher among Republicans. These results follow lingering false claims about the outcome of the 2020 presidential race. Ward County Auditor Marissa Hammond doesn't express great worry about attacks or threats happening in her jurisdiction, but in the current climate, safety is a priority.
Making sure things are secure, election workers are prepared on what to do if something is to happen.
She adds there's coordination between her office, first responders, and local law enforcement agencies closer to an election. I'm Mike Moen.
Finally, from our Edwin J. Vieira, a new report finds Connecticut might be better off without its film industry tax credit. Supporters of the credit say it helps people most in need.
The Connecticut Voices for Children report finds the film industry tax credit costs the state more than $60 million a year. This means that between 2007 and 2023, the state lost around $900 million. Report author Patrick O'Brien says it plays into the state's regressive tax system because it's not targeted to low and middle income families.
If you're spending about $106 million a year in these film industry tax credits moving forward, only a portion of that is going to ultimately be passed through to low and middle income families within Connecticut, and a substantial portion of it is likely to be exported out of state entirely.
O'Brien's research doesn't examine whether that tax credit is worth salvaging, but it does find eliminating it would help the state recover that revenue beginning next year.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Hear us on interesting radio stations on your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Thursday, April 4th. Local early morning temperatures range from 28 degrees in Tannersville to 35 in Copaic. Regional average soil temperature is 40 degrees. All right, brace yourselves, folks. Heavy snow is expected to fall all day for the mountains. Winter weather advisories are out for everyone else. Parts of Ulster and Dutchess near the river are still flooded out. Other people are going to use words like watch or warning, and frankly, that's dumb. So I'm just going to tell you that Port Ewan is flooding. Don't go there. Or anywhere, really. It is going to be really bad, snowy, slushy weather today. Expect that all day long, especially in the morning. We get a high of 39 at 3 p.m. Overnight, the precip should finally come to a stop for everyone, which is pretty good, because we see an overnight low of 31 degrees. Tomorrow, don't get your hopes up. Yes, we get a high temperature of 45 at 3 p.m. However, expect it to be rainy, especially in the afternoon. Overnight will be dry and see a low of 39 degrees. Saturday will be kind of windy, high of 46 degrees, with a looks like some mist falling in the afternoon. Sunday, still a bit windy, but no rain, a high of 49. It'll take some effort, but skies will open up by the end of the day, and that is just going to encourage all the lovely traffic on Monday. Sunset today will be at 7:10 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:27 a.m. Looking way up, we see Comet 12P Pons Brooks has come into naked eye view due to recent outbursts. Such outbursts have given it two major jets that are bent away from it by the solar wind, giving it the appearance of horns from the right angle, leading to the nickname Devil Comet. Could even be visible during the upcoming eclipse. Plasma winds today will be slow at 369 kilometers per second with a thin density of 4 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair below 20 megahertz overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 45. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Listen to music and voices. Listen to art and discussion. Listen to work and play. Listen to eat and drink. Listen to up and down. Listen to noise and fun. Listen to purple and green. Listen to pink and blue. Listen to a heart rainbow. Listen to wizards and witches. Listen to jazz play. Listen to dogs and mice. Listen to Rome and Italy. Listen to Mars and Venus. Listen to the planet. Listen to the planet. Listen to ladies and dumplings. Listen to books. Listen to teeth and trunks. Listen to bath time and nap time. Listen to Kaizen and Violet. Listen to stars and stripes. Listen to Texas and listen to bells and waterfalls. Listen to churches and steeple. Dance and sing and listen and bells. Listen to making things, stripes and zigzags. Listen to clouds and leaves, bike riding and zigzagging. No, listen to bike riding and curving. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio going on and on. Listen to the radio WGXC.
through the snow of Shenandoah. In this long, long dream of life, it's a lonely road that leads us. In a world we can't understand. Ooh, poor blind birds. If we're anything, and the world is not what it seems. Ooh, to
my name is Justin Maiman. This is Ginger Radio Hour. Welcome. You're listening live here on WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM. I'm here in the studio on this about-to-be very hot day. In the background, you hear an instrumental selection from the new album by Florist, Catskills-based Florist. And this hour, you're going to hear my interview with them that I did a couple weeks ago by Zoom. They were in Palinville, I was in Cairo. And I'm going to interweave into the interview we did this incredible new album they have. Lots of critical raves around it. Pitchfork named it best new album, or best new music, all the same thing. But I agree, whatever that means. Let me bring this down a little bit. So that was called Bells Part 3. This new album, self-titled, from Florist, has 19 tracks, and it's interspersed with instrumentals. The whole thing was recorded in 2019 on the porch and in the house, in a house in Hudson Valley. The band basically camped together for a month in a house and made this incredible piece of music. I don't want to speak too much about the music because I think it speaks for itself, and we'll play a lot of it today. The album came out on Friday. The label is Double Double Whammy. And Florist, of course, is made up of Emily Sprague, Johnny Baker, Rick Spataro, and Felix Walworth. They just began touring. I think they're now in the Midwest. They opened the tour in New York, and they're heading out west, and they will be back here in Kingston at Tubby's on August 26th. I'll repeat all of that info later. Again, Florist, a Catskills-based band. They spoke to me from Palinville. I'm going to weave in and out of this interview. I don't think I actually even need to introduce this first part because you're going to hear my voice again. So here we go. Here's Florist.
You've written the definitive soundtrack of the Catskills.
Wow.
Wow.
Full stop.
Yeah, that's a bit of a mic drop.
Thank you.
Damn. That's pretty huge. Yeah.
So bathe in it. Just enjoy it for a moment.
Wow.
It felt like I was listening to an album that had been made in this place.
Wow. That's perfect. That's amazing.
Yeah. Great feedback.
How do you do that?
We just made it in this place. I think.
Yeah. I think it's like there's a huge essence of all of us that is this place. I mean, we're in Palinville right now. We all grew up in the area. Felix here is pretty connected to the area, despite being from the city. And it's kind of like where we all learned, like, who we are and who we are to each other and music, like, we learned here.
Mm. I mean, we started the band, like, a mile away from here, more or less, so... Yeah, just a lot of time and a lot of growth.
Yeah, it's a huge part of who we are and what the band is. And we've also always recorded ourselves, like, in the area, in pretty janky little sheds and cottages and stuff. And I think that's that has always made its way, like, into the sound. And this was kind of the most fleshed out version of doing that we've ever done, which I think really made its way into the actual sound files.
Right.
And yeah, just like emotionally, it's all in there. But definitely wasn't an intention to make it the soundtrack to the place, but it makes sense, I guess.
I mean, we were recording, like, the bulk of the album we were recording in a house together. And we were doing a lot of it on the screened-in porch, doing all different times of day. So you're getting, right, daytime birds and nighttime insects and whatnot. So that is really all accidental, more or less. I mean, I think we go into it knowing that that's something we're okay with, but it was not specifically planned in any way. It was sort of just like that's how it ends up. That's how it sounds once, you know, when you're recording on a porch like that. Yeah. So
I think we're the type of people too, who, like, tend to be open to things being, like, not perfect sounding in a lot of ways that would otherwise maybe be changed or edited. And for us, it's, like, important at the end of the day that something captures, like, a vulnerability or just like a trueness to whatever that is, like recording not with the goal of creating, like, this, like, sort of perfected, fully fleshed out final track that's gonna translate perfectly everywhere and be very clean and tidy, but to have something that just, like, is really capturing time and place and feeling. And that was, like, I think the biggest factor when we were recording. It was very much about being where we were and who we were with each other.
Yeah, so. Yeah, it's sort of the opposite approach to, like, a typical recording studio, which to me is usually a lot more about, like removing variables, like, taking oneself, like, outside, like, out of the environment. And, you know, even just the architecture of those spaces is, like, no windows, like, you know, cloth all over the walls, like, the sound is the only thing. And for us, we were just like, well, let's plop all of our, you know, weird old equipment down in this, the most exposed room in the house, and see what we can make here.
Yeah, it seems like that's not that uncommon nowadays for people, but it's, I think it's really just all we've ever done and sort of what we like to do. It's like a, it's so much, yeah, it's just like a really, like, it's, it feels good as a process.
Yeah.
So it's just like a major at this point that it's like, oh, we just get to be on a porch and, you know, feel the wind blowing and all these sort of like somewhat kind of obvious things, but it really just feels good.
Yeah.
And when you let your environment and your circumstances lead you, like in your art making practice, I just some like really magical things can happen.
Here's Catskill's Brian DeWan with the record.
Summer's The Albany Film Festival will take place on Saturday, April 6th at the New York State Writers Institute at UAlbany, and I'm now joined by Paul Grondel to learn more. Welcome back to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you very much, Sina. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you. The annual Albany Film Festival is back this weekend. How long has this been going on, and what's the background on this film festival?
Yeah, so this is our fourth annual Albany Film Festival, and we got within about a week of our inaugural film festival, and then COVID hit. So we had to regroup. We did a hybrid the next year. We rented out a drive-in theater. We showed a film on the side of our building. And anyway, now we've been in person for the last 3 years, and it's very nice. And people are excited to come together again and see films and talk about films.
Mm. There's quite a few films. There's both feature-length and short films. Are there some notable films that we should know about?
We're really excited about the short film competition because these are emerging filmmakers, including high school students from throughout the capital region, some college students from the region and beyond. And I think you really see some talent there that, you know, they're going to go on to be great filmmakers, but also we're showing films, I think, particularly your audience, Abigail Disney. She's the granddaughter of Roy Disney, the founder of the Walt Disney Company. She's the grandniece of Walt Disney. And, you know, she's inherited a lot of money, and yet she's become an activist. And her theme, this film that we're showing, is on income inequality. She has publicly called for higher taxes on the super wealthy, and she's doing a lot of things to reduce her own footprint of great wealth and to share the money she has. And this film is really an advocacy film. It's won awards. It's called The American Dream and Other Fairy Tales. And she talks about where she started, and that this American dream is not as open to it as if your name isn't Disney and you didn't inherit money. And, you know, so we're really excited about that. And we've got a great moderator, Rosa Clemente, who is a distinguished UAlbany alumna. She's also been a film producer in the past. And I think those two are really going to, you know, get into the heart of things.
When you mentioned that it's local talent, is there a submission process? How do you find the films to show here?
Yeah, so we use Film Freeway, which is kind of the platform that all the film festivals use. And we've put a call out months and months ago. And we got a record number of submissions this year, I think 70 films. And we had a panel of judges, and we all watched them and rated them. There's a whole sort of complicated rating system. And we're really excited about the quality. It gets better every year. And also the filmmakers get younger and younger. There are a lot of high school students and more and more college students. And I think that's really encouraging because there's a really strong and growing filmmaking community here. It's all sort of runs through Discover Albany, Deb Gedeke, who's been a great partner and friend and colleague of ours. And there's been many films and TV shows filming in the Capital Region. And all those films, you know, require people who can work on the film industry, who know how to work on a film. And that's a lot of the young filmmakers that we're talking about here. And so they're going to be coming to the film festival, and they'll know each other. There's a really interesting film by Spencer Sherry. It's called The Monkey, and he acquired the rights to this through Stephen King. Stephen King has a competition every year that for $1 he will give the rights to a kind of an obscure short story of his. And Spencer Sherry, a local filmmaker who has worked on local films, won that, and he created this beautiful film. So we'll be showing that, and he'll be at the film festival. So there is a real strong, you know, 518 flavor, but we also bring in, you know, Jacqueline Bisset, who's a grand actress of decades, and she's worked with a lot of the great actors and a lot of the great directors across different eras. You know, she'll be honored, and we're showing a film of hers. The director and her will be in conversation. The film is called Lauren and Rose, and so we're excited about that as well.
With so many of the filmmakers showing up, it gives a real extra dimension to this being a networking and learning event. since there's the Writers Institute, New York State Writers Institute is at the SUNY Albany campus, what does that do for students' access to learning about film and story production?
That's a great question, because I think what we've always tried to find a niche. There's a lot of film festivals. I'm thinking in this area, the Woodstock Film Festival, the Lake Placid Film Festival, and those are excellent. But ours is a little different. We really focus on the intersection of writing and film. So we have screenwriters. We have a session with film critics. You know, film criticism is changing. There's fewer outlets for serious film criticism. And a lot of things are changing in the film industry. We have a session on how artificial intelligence is now coming into the filmmaking industry. And we have, you know, discussion of the editor who edited Paul Newman's autobiography, you know. So we like to call it a bookish film festival, where we're not just sitting in the dark and watching film after film after film. There's a lot of conversations. I'm excited about the conversations that I'll be leading with Lizzie Gottlieb. Her film is called Turn Every Page. And for writers and editors, it's an incredible examination of this 50-year relationship, writer and editor, between Robert Caro, one of the great biographers of our time, and Lizzie Gottlieb's late father, Robert Gottlieb, who was one of the great editors of his time. And they worked together for 50 years, from The Power Broker through this five-volume LBJ magnum opus that Caro is still trying to finish. So, again, we really like to relate it to our core mission, which is writing and everything to do with writing.
And writers are such an important part of the film process, as we saw recently with the writers' strike. Is yes. that a part of the conversation here at all about the equal rights to pay?
Yeah, very much. I mean, that's a good question. If you talk to directors, producers, filmmakers, they say the same thing, is that every great film starts with a great script. It's hard to make a good film or a great film with a lousy script, which would mean lousy writing. So the writing is very important. We have screenwriters who are part of this. So learning how writing fits into a very visual medium is really important. And to your point about artificial intelligence and the strike, I mean, the writer's strike in Hollywood, a lot of it was over what's coming ahead with artificial intelligence replacing people and disrupting and losing jobs. And so we're going to have that discussion with people who are on the forefront of studying it and thinking about it. But definitely AI is, you know, changing writing and the film industry as we speak.
And all of this is taking place on Saturday, April 6th, 10:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. And did I read right that there's no need to reserve tickets? I would imagine these seats are just filling up.
Yeah. I mean, what we really like is we're able to present almost all of our program. We do 70 plus events every year, and we keep it free and open to anyone, which we love. Students we know have financial strains. A lot of people can't afford even a ticket price at a cinema these days. So we keep it free through sponsorships. We have a lot of wonderful sponsors. They're listed on the program. We'll thank them publicly. So people who have said, this is really important, we will provide the funding so that people can come free of charge. Yeah, you don't have to make a reservation. We even offer free parking right at our Dutch Quad parking lot. All this information, maps, a whole schedule, biographies of the people who are coming is at our website, albanyfilmfestival.org.
And you'll be moderating a few of these events, right? So
yeah, I'm excited about it. The other one, Merchant Ivory. You know, we've shown some of these films on Friday nights for free at Page Hall leading up to it, just because one day it's hard to show a lot of two-hour full-length films. So we've shown a lot of these. And this film, Merchant Ivory, by a UAlbany alumnus, Stephen Soucy, is a beautiful, beautiful film. And he interviewed all, you know, Emma Thompson and Helena Bonham Carter and all the stars that were in those beautiful Merchant Ivory films. And it's a really incredible film. And I'm looking forward to James Ivory's going to be coming. He lives in Columbia County. He's 92, I believe. He actually was the oldest person to win an Oscar. He won for screenwriting for Call Me By Your Name. And, you know, to have the two of them in conversation is wonderful. And we'll show some clips and some things that haven't been seen, kind of outtakes and things of the film. And then the two of them, Stephen Soucy and James Ivory, will have this wonderful conversation that I'll moderate.
Well, thank you, Paul Grondel, for telling us about the Albany Film Festival taking place this Saturday. Is there anything that I forgot to ask that's important to know about the film festival?
Yeah, we just love to have people of all ages. In past years, I think I can remember kids as young as 6 or 7 all the way to 96, you know. So it is have something kind of for everyone. And there's a lot of really interesting conversations taking place. And it's a way to network. If you are interested in getting into film, you can meet young people who have made films. You can meet veterans from the industry. Yeah, we love that it's a sharing of ideas and networking for people.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sina.
Waxed up hair and my painted shoes. Got an offer that you might refuse. Tonight we're gonna take a stab. Come on along, we'll grab a cab. There ain't much to look at, so close your eyes, here we go. We're playing at the talent show. Playing at the talent show. Come on along, here we go. Playing at the talent show. Check us out, here we go. Playing at the talent show.
Yo, Pitt.
Well, we got our guitars and we got our fun picks. And we're going on after some lips and chicks. We're feeling good from the pills we took.
Let's head to Copake now with PG6 or Pat Gubler. This is PG6's Quiet Fan for SK on 90.7 FM WGXC. Here is 2019 music from Wet Tuna, which is Copaik's Pat Gubler and Matt Valentine from up in Vermont way. This album is called Water Weird, released in 2019, and this is the first song, Poor Old Interstellar, on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.